All right, so we'll get started with just the board will introduce themselves. So my name is Aaron Espinoza. I serve as the president of the California Council of Blind Students, as well as serving as the president of the American Council of Blind Students, which is the national student affiliate. And I'll pass it over to, she's not here right now, but Megan Downing is our first vice president. She's in Boston, Massachusetts. She attends Berkeley, the School of Medicine, and now I'll pass it over to our treasurer.
I'm Mandy Tom. I'm the current treasurer. Am I
All
supposed
right.
to pick somebody or?
No, we're just going down. And is Karen Schroeder here so she can introduce herself, being the secretary?
I don't see Karen, not at this point.
All right. Well, guys, that's the board, and we'll start off. I want to welcome Minha, the former American Council of Blind Students president. She's in Boston, I believe, or maybe not, but she's here to talk to us about her Holman Prize idea. She became a finalist, I think it was last week. So, Min, you want to introduce yourself and then talk a little bit about your idea?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thanks so much, Aaron, for inviting me to talk to you guys. I am the former president of ACB Students, so I'm familiar with most of you in California, which is really awesome. But I'm here to talk about my Holman Prize idea. So I actually became a semi-finalist. Hoping to get one of the finalist spots. So fingers crossed for me, everybody. So my project is called the Mandala Project, and it's a play on the word mandala and my name. So this project centers around making tactile coloring books available to blind and low vision people. So just kind of a little bit about me. I'm very open when I talk about kind of like mental health. So I'm a person with bipolar, and this is something that I struggle with highs and lows and depression. And I just never felt like there was a good way for people, for blind people with depression, with bipolar, with any kind of mental illness, to have an outlet, to just even relieve stress. If you don't have a mental illness, if you're just having a really crappy day and you need an outlet, sighted people have coloring books. During the pandemic, sales for adult coloring books soared because people were getting sick and everyone was getting stressed because they were isolated. And we didn't have that resource. So, that was kind of like the catalyst for me in starting this project. And I think the clincher was I was fortunate enough to get a secondhand tactile image embosser, and I started creating tactile coloring books for friends, just as like a nice way to spread some of the tactile wealth. And it was amazing in kind of just the feedback and the amount of support, and the requests that I received, from everyone from students to teachers to parents. Everyone was just so excited to be able to color for stress relief and, even more importantly, to connect with sighted children. And so I decided to apply for the Holman Prize for Blind Ambition. It's a program through the Lighthouse. The San Francisco Lighthouse, and it would award $25,000 to three prize winners to carry out their projects. And so I'm hoping to kind of bring my tactile coloring books into the public. So bring it to organizations like California Council of Blind Students to run little workshops, like stress management workshops, because you know, I've been a student, so I know how stressful it is. And there has to be healthy, you know, artistic ways for blind people to experience color and to de-stress.
Wow. So yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Min, for being so open about your struggles and how you're dealing with them and just being really open. Some people have a hard time letting people know what they're going through behind closed doors. So thank you very much. Could we take one quick question if anyone has one, or a comment? Does anyone have any questions for Min?
I don't see any raised hands at the moment.
All right, then we'll move on. Well, thank you, Min. I know you're in the East Coast and it's like 10, I don't know. 10,
yeah, 40, it's late 50. For me, but I'm glad to have spoken to you, and definitely keep an eye out for this project. You know, regardless if I win or not, I'm definitely going to keep pushing on with it because I believe in it and I'm passionate about it. So, you know, please pay attention and support wherever you can.
So. Yeah, we always got the back of a fellow ACB member and a former ACBS president, and just a great person, and your guide dog, Giraffe, which I love the name of.
Yes, the Viva Giraffe, of course.
All right, tell them I said hi, Giraffe.
I will. Thanks, everyone. Have a good night.
All right, guys. So we'll move on to the panel. We got three training centers from across the country. The first one, I'll let him introduce himself, Gene Kim. He's representing an NFB center. So Gene, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Gene Kim. It's good to see some familiar names in the Zoom participant list. I am currently a sophomore at Stanford University studying symbolic systems with a focus in artificial intelligence and a minor in mechanical engineering. I attended the Colorado Center for the Blind in Littleton, Colorado. It's one of the NFB training centers, as Aaron mentioned. And yeah, I'm really excited to be here with all of you guys.
All right, then. Dina Rosenbaum, do you want to introduce yourself and say what center you're representing?
Sure. Hi. Good evening, everybody. My name is Dina Rosenbaum. I'm from the Carroll Center for the Blind outside of Boston, Massachusetts, on the East Coast. And we are an international rehabilitation center that provides programs in independent living and technology training.
All right. And our last person representing the Helen Keller Center in New York. Okay, he did tell me he was going to be might be a little late because he has classes, but we're looking for Anthony Cruz. So if he comes in, that's the person representing the Helen Keller Center in New York. All right, guys, we'll start off with the first question then. All right. First of all, there's a trigger warning for the second question. It does involve sexual abuse at training centers. So just want to put that out there. That's the second question. So just trigger warning for that, guys. So, but I'll start off with the light question, which is the first one. All right, what is the process for a student trying to attend your center, or what was your process like? So Gene, since you're just a student, what was your process like? And Dina, what's the process for a student that wants to go? Like, what I mean by that is talking to their counselors and getting approved or denied, or fighting them, having to write a justification letter. So what is that process like? And we'll start off with you at the Carroll Center.
So when we get an inquiry for somebody who wants to attend our programs, we work with them in identifying whether they're registered and first working with a state agency for the blind. We are approved as a vendor for many states, so we will work with you and your identified counselor in providing whatever information the counselor needs to approve the program. We also do accept private pay for individuals, but we really work with the individual in working with the state agency and their counselor to making sure the state agency has everything they need to get approval. Of course, the individual themselves still needs to meet the eligibility that the state has for that side of it. But we certainly work with you to make the whole process as smooth as possible. I should say that we have a director of admissions, Kathy Felt. So she's the one who works with you and sort of navigates this with you. And we do one-on-one interview process, an admissions process. And in some cases, mostly for people who are more local to like in the greater Northeast, she will also come out and meet with you. Or if you'd like to come to the Carroll Center for a visit, if that's possible, or a virtual visit, we do entertain that as well.
Jean, do you want to answer the question? What was the process you as a student getting to the Colorado Center for the Blind?
Yeah, for sure. And apologies, I dropped out, so I'm not sure if I missed something. But I'm back now. Hooray. So for the Colorado Center for the Blind, the process for me first started out by, you know, looking at the different training center options within California. Of course, there's OCB, Hatland, and maybe a couple others. And just really calling people and getting to understand sort of different graduation requirements, the different opportunities I would have, the different people, etc. And then from there, it was working with, I was fortunate enough to work with Julie Deedon, who is the director of CCB, and she was able to help me formulate my justification letter and give me some advice for what I should write to my VR counselor and explaining why I was going to attend an out-of-state training center, which was a very big deal and caught her by surprise. So after sending her an email expressing my interest in attending an out-of-state center and attaching my justification letter, we had a 2.5-hour phone conversation about you know, the different reasons why I needed to go, felt like I needed to go to an out-of-state training center. And after that, it's pretty much just a waiting game, just making sure to check in every week or so to, you know, not let the ball drop and let it slip through the cracks. And I started this process in November of 2021. And for me, I was able to go to training by March of 2022. Is that how the timeline's working out? That is not how the timeline is working out. It is a year behind that. Started the process in September of 2020, and then was able to attend training in March 2021. So for me, it took just a couple of months, but I have heard other students who take many, many more months who get flat out rejected or denied that opportunity by their counselor, and they have to escalate that case and start appealing. But thankfully, I did not have to go through that process. So that's a high-level overview.
All right. Thank you, Jean. So as I mentioned, the second question does talk about sexual harassment and sexual abuse at training centers. So just that trigger warning. So I'll get into the question. So in December 2020, survivors of sexual harassment and abuse posted their stories on Facebook, and a lot of them mentioned training centers. So the question is, what is your training center doing to address that problem and making sure that your students are safe when they attend there and they don't have to deal with or be abused by anyone there? So what is your center doing to address the problem of sexual harassment and sexual abuse at your training center? And we'll start off with Eugene first. So what did the Colorado Center of the Blind do to ensure the safety of students?
Yeah, absolutely. So a few steps that CCB has taken during my time there was implementing sensitivity training and, consent training. And very much we dedicated almost an entire day to go over from RAIN training. That's the official company, and they specialize in their training. And personally, I have done a lot of those kinds of trainings before going to public school in the Bay Area, where, you know, these issues are talked about a lot. But compared to those trainings, I think the training here that was done by Rain was very comprehensive. It was very very thorough and very detailed, and really taking a really deep dive into how issues arise, why we need to be careful with wording, victim blaming, and so many other things. And yeah, they have ongoing consent training. I speak to a couple of friends just today, actually, and they mentioned that they are continuing to do the consent training. And yeah, that's just sort of one of the steps that they've been taking. Obviously, this is a very sensitive issue and very complex issue that they are really trying to, you know, find ways of addressing. But thankfully, during my time there, their like students felt very safe around the staff, and we trusted the staff, and we had a very open and very supportive and safe community. So they are working on it.
And Adina, do you want to answer the question now?
Sure. So as part of our onboarding for clients who come to the Carroll Center, we have a client handbook and we have a code of conduct that everybody is reviewed and everybody must sign, indicating behavior that we expect at the Carroll Center, that of course we do not allow any types of harassment or bullying or sexual conduct at the Carroll Center, even consensual sexual conduct at the Carroll Center on our premises. And additionally, our staff are required to participate in annual harassment, bullying training, and also we are a mandated reporter. So we have state training on mandated reporting of any abuse that occurs. So that's an annual training that all our staff participate in.
All right, thank you. All right, so the next question is, what method does your center use to teach your students, and what benefits does it provide, the specific method used? So I know the NFB Center uses structured discovery, but Dina, what method does the Carroll Center use?
Our staff are certified professionals, certified orientation mobility, rehab teachers, assistive technology, and we have social workers on staff as well. So we provide instruction in small or individualized group instruction. To develop skills, we use a curriculum that we create and work with the individual on skills and outcomes that they want to cover. So we use a model of most of our instructors are professional certified with master's degrees. So we're using the curriculum and training that they have received.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember reading once when I checked out the Carroll Center's, like when you first get there, they let you try out whatever cane you want to see what best fits. I don't know if that's up-to-date info.
Yes, that's our goal is for development of independent skills and working with the best fit model that works for you. So for orientation mobility, you work with a certified orientation mobility instructor who works with you on selecting a cane. And of course, we encourage people to have more than one cane or tip. So some people have might choose to have two different canes to have with them or to use in different environments, and then provide instruction in using those canes.
All right.
As an example.
Yeah, thank you. And Jean, what method does the Colorado Center for the Blind use, and what's the benefit of it?
Yeah, so we use the structured discovery method, which at a high level is essentially saying, is the belief that students should really be encouraged to explore and learn for themselves. Of course, teachers are there to guide with questions and specific, hints and whatnot to sort of facilitate that learning process. But ultimately, it's up to the student to really take that learning for themselves and really discover for themselves how to do something non-visually or how to become more effective at a particular skill. And I think that the really big benefit of that for me, undergoing that kind of training philosophy, was really gave me confidence. Like, I was creating my own knowledge. I was developing my own techniques with the help of other people. So it really gave me that kind of confidence and self-reliance, which I think for me, that's what training was all about. I knew that in 6 to 9 months, I couldn't gain every single skill. But the fact that I had that core foundation of confidence, which for me came from that structured discovery philosophy, that's what I was after. And that's what I got out of it. So.
All right. Yeah, thank you. And the last one before we open it up for questions. What kind of extracurricular, oh man, I can't say that word. Oh, basically, what fun things do students do when they attend these centers? And Jean, I'll start off with you. What kind of fun things did you guys do at the center?
For sure. So we have seasonal trips. Unfortunately, I went during the pandemic. So unfortunately, some of the activities were suspended or postponed. But over the summer, as things opened up a little bit more, I did attend, did participate in whitewater rafting. We went outdoor rock climbing, lots of challenge recreational activities. They also go skiing in the winter. So that's sort of the big trips that kind of happen. We also went to the pool. There's a lot of outing type activities that can happen. And then even within the actual curriculum is really encouraged. There's one class called enrichment, which changes every day. So students engaged in tactile art and a lot of other activities like just like fitness, like non-visual fitness and yoga. You had a fitness instructor come in. And we had just a lot of different people. Like woodworking was another big one. There are just so many different activities that you could do. Gardening. And also, if you wanted to explore an interest, you can also make your own club and sort of meet outside of regular school hours. I was in the process of helping start up a robotics club, but that fell through just because of some logistical snags that we ran into. But yeah, pretty much whatever you want to explore is sort of at your fingertips.
And Dina, what kind of things do you guys do at the Carroll Center?
So you have to remember the Carroll Center campus includes a dormitory on our campus. It's not separate. So we do have an exercise room in our dormitory. We have a manual arts and sensory arts classroom that does woodworking activities, other types of crafts. We have a kiln and pottery program as part of the training program. We have different arts and crafts and evening activities, yoga, etc. We have fencing that is part of the training program that aligns with orientation and mobility. In the summer, in our youth programs in summer, we have a sail blind program for blind sailing with a community boating program in Boston. And then we work with other local organizations that provide adapted recreation, whether it's skiing or rock climbing or rowing, whatever that facility is offering, we make available to the students. But again, we do encourage our students to kind of come with their own bucket list and create outings and activities as a group to develop socialization and foster independence. We are rich that we're right near Boston, so it's very easy to access the Museum of Fine Arts or other types of recreation.
All right, and I did forget one question though before we open it up. Sorry. Do students have any requirements to graduate from your program, and if so, what are they? And we'll start off with you, Dina.
So our it really depends on the program that the individual's in. Our independent living program is typically a 12-week program. So students finish the program at 12 weeks, and their completion of skills is really dependent on each discipline. In orientation and mobility, it really depends on the individual and how they progress. As an example, some people make it in 12 weeks to go to the airport on their own, and some people just develop skills to take a bus on their own. So it really depends on the individual and what their goals are. We do have a user testing, screen reader user testing program that does have more of a very advanced curriculum where individuals have to perform homework and assignments and take an exam at the end to identify, sort of get their certificate to complete the program.
Okay, and Jean, does CCB have any requirements? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, so CCB and these graduation requirements are pretty similar throughout the three training centers that are NFP affiliated, the one in Colorado, the one in Louisiana, and the one in Minnesota. For travel, the requirements are that you have to do at least two drops, which means a site staff will drive you to some part of town or a neighboring town. They will take your phone away. They'll put you in sleep shades because that's part of the program. You wear sleep shades the entire time. And then they say, good luck, make it back to the center, which sounds very daunting, but it's really, really empowering when you are able to achieve that. In Colorado, at CCB, the sort of capstone travel requirement is called your monster route, where you have to you got to plan your own day throughout you know, the local area, and you just kind of have your own fun day to yourself. The requirement is that you visit four different locations, one location per, essentially you have to visit four different cities in one day, completely independently, with sleep shades on. So that's for travel requirements. For home management, the goals are that you do a independently plan, shop, and prepare a meal for 6 people, 15 people, and then 50 to 60 people. That last meal is your graduation meal. It's a very special time where you've completed all of your graduation requirements and get to celebrate with a lot of other, the whole center. And then for the individual Braille and tech and other classes, that is really individualized with your instructor. People have done a range of things from building computers to learning how to code, making their own personal blog, using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, or WordPress, even things like, you know, making a recipe book, embossing something, you name it. Like, people have really tailored those classes for their own interests and their own skill levels. So that's a high-level overview of the graduation requirements at CCB and some of the other training centers that are NFP affiliated.
Sorry, I don't know why the representative for the Helen Keller Center couldn't make it. I didn't know he was going to come 15 minutes late, but they haven't showed up. But we'll open it up for questions. If anyone has any questions, we can take them. Anyone have any questions? You can say your name or raise your hand. All right. I got a couple of questions and we'll try again. All right, so does your class have a class dedicated to building up and developing a student's blindness philosophy? So we'll start off with you, Jean, again. I don't know if you heard the question or you want me to say it again.
Aaron, you have a hand raised. Do you want to take it now?
Okay. Yeah.
Rocco Romeo?
Yeah, go ahead, Rocco.
You can go ahead and unmute.
Yeah, I have a question. So, Jean, you discussed writing a specific justification letter after sort of like doing like an initial like conversation about like what your intention is. Could you describe that, how that works?
Yeah, who wants to go answer his question first?
I'd be happy to answer it.
All right. Jean, you can go, and then Dina can go.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the initial conversation was just sort of through email, kind of expressing my interest, like, hey, VR counselor, I am interested in attending the center, you know, just putting this on your radar. And then I called the director of the training center, and she gave me some wording suggestions, some points I could make, and just really asked me why, kind of getting to the heart of why I wanted to attend CCB in particular, and helping me flesh out justifications for that. And then the actual justification letter is something that is a little bit more formal in language that I crafted, that has a sort of like a list of different reasons, and then some bullet like paragraph length justification sort of underneath those different subpoints and sub justifications. And that's something I attached to send to my VR counselor, DR counselor, after sort of starting that dialogue.
How do you learn how to write that letter?
That's a great question. I unfortunately, there isn't a very like a centralized, hey, you can check this resource out on a website. It's really through word of mouth and kind of working with other people who have written justification letters before, or the director of the center, from my experience. So if you are interested in writing a justification letter or would like an example of one, I'd be more than willing to share mine with you, or we could talk offline about that too.
Okay, I would like that.
All right, we'll give it a chance to Dina to also answer the question.
Sure. So we work with the individual in terms of what their goals are and what kind of program they're looking for and what their needs are, and how our program might fit their needs. So as an example, we work with a very diverse population of individuals who come to the Carroll Center. So one example is our dormitory is on our campus, and we provide all our meals through a dining service. Not to say that people don't do cooking and prepare meals. So if an individual has limits or difficulty living in an apartment and having that responsibility, that would be one advocacy why the Carroll Center might be a better fit. We also have a low vision clinic. We work with people who have low vision to use their visual skills as best they're able to, but also provide non-visual training in some of our classes. So that might be another way that you, if you're low vision and you need low vision training and want to work with a low vision therapist, that might be another reason why we might be a better fit for you. We have lots of clientele with intellectual disabilities, where the curriculum is adapted for them to focus on the skills that they really need to focus on instead of just a general curriculum that everybody has to go through. So we can help you identify some of those things and have a meeting with you and your counselor and talk about these and help advocate for you and why we may be a better fit for you.
Follow-ups, Rocco, or any comments?
Aaron, you have another hand. Sarah has her hand up.
Okay, hold on though. Rocco, okay. Do you want to add anything to it? Or any clarifications to their comments or answers, I mean?
No.
All right, then, yeah.
Just how, where would I find an example of a justification letter? Is there like some resource where I could find like examples of that sort of thing?
Gene, I think Gene said he can show you his, and also I can show you mine, and I can probably find another person. Like I can find you a couple of examples for and forward those to you, Rocco, so you can take a look at kind of what they look like.
Thanks.
All right, go ahead, Sarah.
Thank you, Aaron. So, Gene, this question is for you. I'm intrigued. Tell us more about when you got dropped off in the middle of nowhere. How did you manage that? What did you do? What did you do without a phone? Tell us.
Yeah, sure. It sounds pretty crazy, but while during the program, you learn about different navigational techniques, such as like understanding how the address system works. Basically, at a high level overview, the Denver metropolitan area, which goes up, you know, to Boulder, all the way down even to Colorado Springs, the very large area, has a system where there are sort of zero streets, we can call them, going through the center of the metropolitan area, going north and south, and then going east and west. And then as you move one block over, let's say, from that north-south center street, as you move one block over to the right, your addresses are going to be from 0 to 100. You move one block further to the right, I guess east, addresses are going to be between 100 and 200, and et cetera. And generally, the address block number corresponds with the bus number that actually goes along down that street. So you're just using, so that's sort of like one of the tools that you can use. Another strategy is generally buses travel on busier roads. So if you get dropped off at a pre-residential area, you can sort of listen to traffic. Maybe a few cars are passing by and sort of follow in the general direction that they're going. And that'll, because those cars are going somewhere, probably to a busier road to branch into a highway or something like that. So that was kind of a clue to look for bus stops on busier street. And then once I got on a bus stop, I was able to listen to the street name announcements and then see if I heard anything familiar. And most buses generally tend to stop at a light rail station or some other kind of transit center where you can make additional transfers. So just a combination of different tools and different techniques. I guess another thing I should have clarified is you're not only allowed to ask the public one question. You aren't really allowed to ask for any, pretty much any assistance as you're making that trip too. So it's really fun. It's like very, it's like a puzzle. You learn how to solve it, and it's a fun time.
So, but just as a follow up, is there like a person watching to make sure you're safe, or like are these routes that you've traveled like many times? Like I'm just a little confused.
Yeah, for sure, no worries. At CCB you do two drops. I think at LCB you might do three, or Louisiana Center for the Blind, and some other number. But at Colorado Center for the Blind, first drop is a support drop. So your travel instructor actually goes with you, but they don't ask, you're not allowed to ask them any questions. They pretty much are just there purely for the sake of making sure you are safe. And on that drop, neither you nor your travel instructor knows where you are. It is generally a new location. On your second drop, it's your independent drop. So you get dropped independently. No one is with you. There might be a sighted staff sort of nearby just to make sure you don't take your sleep shades off or make sure that you are safe. But that's not, I never really confirmed if that was the case. But a lot of folks, the idea is that you're completely independent in a new location that you have not been before. And using the skills that you've developed over the 6 to 9 months, you would be able to confidently get back on time, and they will calibrate to your skill level based on, you know, how you've been performing throughout the course of the program.
Interesting. Thank you so much.
All right. Anyone else have any questions? I got a couple myself then.
Aaron, you have another hand. Anthony?
Yeah, go ahead, Anthony.
Actually, a couple questions. One is, I was very interested when you said that you wanted to go out of state. What was your main reason for wanting to go out of state?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as a potential mechanical engineering major, I am at least going to take a lot of courses to get a minor. But there's a lot of machining and a lot of manufacturing classes that I have to take, where I use things like lathes, CNC machines, laser cutters, power saws and things like that. And at the time, due to COVID, none of the training centers in California had active like woodworking programs. So I wanted to go to one where I could develop those tools and gain some confidence and competence there. And also at Colorado Center for the Blind specifically, Ann Cunningham, who is phenomenal, does a lot of work in the tactile art and tactile drafting space. Learning that engineering skill of, hey, how do I turn my idea into a drawing that I can feel and that other people can see to communicate what my engineering design ideas are. That was really appealing. So that's why I chose to go out of state to that particular center.
Okay. And you kind of answered the question, the other question I had, which I'm not, I kind of get lost when people use these letter things, CCB and NFB and all that. Well, I mean, I know what the National Federation for the Blind is. I assume that that's NFB. And it took me a while to come to the conclusion that what you were saying when you were saying CCB was Colorado Center for the Blind. So that was my other question was is NFB the only one who does this training stuff?
Yes. So just your first point, I apologize for the lingo. I think I've been told multiple times that I use a lot of short acronyms like that, like SF or San Francisco. Some folks even aren't familiar. Thank you for sticking with me. The NFB is directly affiliated with three specific training centers at least, and I believe six in total use the structured discovery philosophy approach to teaching. But the three ones that are specifically NFB affiliated that are private are the ones in Louisiana, in Ruston, in Minneapolis and Minnesota, and then Littleton/Denver in Colorado.
Okay. Well, that like I said, that clarifies it a bit for me. There was another thing that I was going to ask about.
And I just want to add the Carroll Center for the Blind is a private rehabilitation center. And there are a handful of other ones around the country. There's one in Pittsburgh, one in Arkansas. There are a couple other private rehabilitation centers. And then there are a couple of state rehabilitation centers around the United States.
Now, Pittsburgh, are you speaking of Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Yeah, I went to school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yes. The other thing, and I'm trying to rack my brain for how I can put this. It has to do with the structured discovery training. Can you give me a definition of what that is?
Yeah. So I wish I had a concise definition I could just read off to you. But essentially, it's the idea that students should learn for themselves through guidance and support, but ultimately the learning is up to the student in terms of, you know, discovering for themselves how to, do things non-visually with the experienced instructor sort of facilitating and guiding that experience. But like primarily the learning is up to the student, self-motivated learning.
Okay, well, thank you.
Discovery learning is unique to NFB training centers. The other agencies mostly employ professionals, and not to say that NFB staff are not also certified. I know some of them are, but most of the other rehabilitation centers employ like certified orientation mobility instructors who attend graduate level master's degree programs for which they are provided training and provided with the training to follow a curriculum to provide instruction in orientation mobility. Same thing with rehab teachers, assistive technology instructors, et cetera.
Well, I want to thank our guests. I want to thank you for putting on this program tonight.
Yeah, I wish our Carroll Center friend, our Helen Keller Center friend could have made it so we could have got the deafblind perspective. I'm not sure why he couldn't make it, but he didn't make it. Is there any more hands or anyone have any more questions? I have some myself, but I want to let the audience ask them. All right. So the other question I did have, can you give us an example of a student that got their basically their transformation once they got there and once they left the center. Can you give us kind of the best example you have of a student and the process they went through, the transformation, I mean? And we'll start off with you, Dina. Can you give us an example of a student that stands out to you?
Sure. We had a young woman who had just graduated high school, who had some additional learning challenges, who actually came to two programs. She did a summer program and then she did an adult 6-month program called Vocational Transition with us. And after the program, she and her parents kind of were amazed at how independent she was after she came home. She happened to, I think, live in Virginia, not too far from DC. She attended community college initially, was traveling independently using Uber, et cetera. And then after 2 years, matriculated into a 4-year college program where she's now living on campus very successfully and thriving. And on her way to getting a college degree. So to me, that's a great success story for somebody whose family didn't really think she would even go to college. So that's a probably good example of a young adult just developing transition skills and confidence and the independence to kind of pursue her goals.
Oh, great. And Jean, do you want to answer the question? You can't give it yourself as an example.
Yeah, sure. I had a friend there, a good friend, who shared his story. And when he first came in, he was very, very opposed to using a cane. You know, he has some residual vision and he was primarily relying on that. But also, even just on a deeper level, from a mental health perspective, because he was losing his vision, he told me that, you know, most of the time he was spending sort of on his dad's couch, just like, you know, eating food, watching TV, and like, you know, just a very unhealthy lifestyle and something that he was really unhappy with. And he came to training and saw so many successful people who were really trying to, you know, striving for their own independence. And he was really inspired by that and really took that to another level. So he had, you know, no experience using a screen reader before, no experience reading Braille before, non-visual travel, etc. And he turned out to be one of the like strongest travelers at the center that I knew. Just complete 180. He, you know, just it was just incredible just seeing how much progress he made in the 6 months that he was at the center. And now he's has a dream of opening his own restaurant, using those non-visual skills to cook, and, you know, the tech aspect to like set up menus and make a website and things like that. It's pretty cool.
All right, one last question, then we'll open it up again and then we'll wrap up. So the question is, does your center have a class where they teach kind of like blindness philosophy? Like, do they teach blindness philosophy, basically how to be a blind person, what some things you would face as a blind person in society and how to overcome them or what to do, basically? And Jean, we'll start off with you. Does the CCB have that sort of class where they teach you about blindness, right and wrong, how to advocate for yourself? And what's one subject or topic they talked about during that class, if they have it?
Yeah, for sure. So CCB actually has a dedicated philosophy class, blindness philosophy class every day, for about 45 minutes to an hour. And yeah, that's, you know, generally we will look at or listen to some article or a podcast episode or an interview, or some of the instructors will have a topic prepared and sort of, you know, open discussion, sort of letting us kind of share our own experiences and struggles and things like that. One topic that I thought was really exciting was actually Dan Parker. We got to hear an interview that he did with CCB. And if folks aren't familiar, Dan Parker, you know, his story in a nutshell is that he lost his vision. He was a longtime drag racer. He had some awards. He won the 2012 ADRL Pro Nitrous Championship race, which is a big deal, a couple other races. He's been racing since he was a little child. But in 2005 ADR All Championships. In 2012, he competed again and had a major accident, and that left him completely blind. But he didn't let that stop him. He went to a training center. He actually built his own, with some help, of course, built his own car that uses vibrations and sounds to give him feedback. So while he's racing, so he can maneuver around the obstacles himself. And he just broke the world record 2 weeks ago for fastest car driven blindfolded at 211 miles per hour. And that's crazy to me, because I was like, wow, I thought driving is such, we assume it has to be such a visual task, but I think with enough creativity and ingenuity, I feel like blind people really can do a lot of things, if not anything that we put our minds to. It's just a matter of using the right tools, the right technology. And I thought that was a very encouraging takeaway that really inspired me to pursue my own dreams to the utmost. So it's one moment that really stood out to me.
All right, and Dina, does the carousel?
Sure. So we don't have a philosophy class. We are a holistic program that integrates adjustment to blindness as part of the whole program. We have social workers that meet and counsel people individually on their journey to adjusting to their vision loss. And then we have a group class with a whole group of individuals who are in the program to discuss different topics on adjustment, especially around family and how to find your place within the family and advocate for your independence within the family, advocate for your independence in school or in work or in the community. Our director of the program, our director of rehabilitation, Jennifer Harnish, is a psychotherapist. She leads the program. She's also a graduate of the Carroll Center. So we have staff that also serve as mentors for the individuals going through the program. So for us, it's a very holistic picture that combining the skills that you're learning with going through the program and being with other peers and being with staff who serve as mentors in discussing the adjustment that you as an individual are going through all contribute to the process of adjusting and sort of developing your life to live as a blind person, and how you can be successful in that.
Oh, great. All right, we'll open it up for questions. Does anyone have a question? You can just
say Sarah has her hand raised. Okay. We have a couple hands, actually. So Sarah, right, Sarah's first.
Yeah, okay. I was about to say, you can either just unmute yourself and say your name or raise your hand. And go ahead, Sarah.
Awesome. Thank you, Erin. Dina, this one's for you. So I'm a director of programs at a Center for Independent Living here in Central California. And I love to hear that you have students who not only have vision loss, but they're also people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Do you feel like maybe the Carroll Center is one of the few programs that does offer that type of service?
I think so. I can't say that we're the only one, because I don't know all the programs, but we do support people with different disabilities and differential needs that we can support. So we have, for example, people who have brain injuries who can't travel by themselves. They don't have the ability to go out and take a bus and travel on their own, but they still need to learn to cane travel. They need to learn to go up and down stairs and cross streets, even if they're crossing with somebody. They still need to learn to use their phone, prepare simple meals. Maybe they're not using an oven, but they can use a microwave and do tabletop. We have a nurse on staff to support people with health needs. We have a lot of diabetic patients who are in the program who just need the education to manage and learn how to manage their diabetes independently and use an app if they have a continuous glucose monitor, how to use their phone and app, but also have other ways to manage their diabetes. I think the benefit of the Carroll Center is the nurse and the campus dormitory, which is really on the campus and easy access to your training that support people who have more of these additional health needs. And some of the reason people choose to come to the Carroll Center because of that.
Oh, that is so cool. I'm so excited to hear about this resource because we do have a lot of people that their vision loss hasn't been addressed, and this is a great resource. So thank you so much. I think that's so cool. It's meeting people where they're at and, you know, whatever their vision of independence is, right? Yeah, no, I love it.
Correct. Yes, correct. So that's why it's our program is more individualized in knowing that some people just have more minimal goals to achieve. And if their agency is supportive of that, I mean, I think anybody who can be as independent as they can be is certainly worth participating in training and developing those skills, even if it means that they don't have to have a visiting nurse every day, but maybe once a week, or, you know, they can prepare simple meals and not have to have all their meals delivered to them.
All right.
Nisha. Very cool. Thank you.
All right. Nisha, someone else had?
Yeah, we have an, and I want to apologize first. I lowered the wrong hand and I'm really sorry. Vibia Shaw, I probably butchered the name and I apologize for that too. So please go ahead if you have a question.
No, you're totally good. Jean, this one is for you. You talked quite a bit about the ambitious graduation requirements, especially in the context of orientation and mobility, and how those skills are meant to teach you how to learn for yourself. I read somewhere in the news that your college campus is like 8,000 acres big and has a lot of random roundabouts and twists and turns. I was wondering if you could share a little bit more about how you cross-apply the skills you learn in another city in new, potentially complex environments, especially in cane travel.
That's a great question, Bobby. I'm so happy you know that statistic about my campus, as you put it.
Yeah, I wonder how you know.
And just to clarify, Bobby is also a student at Stanford, if folks didn't know already. So, yeah, I think training, like I mentioned earlier, training really gave me the confidence, and I think that's the foundation. So first and foremost, me saying, hey, okay, like I can walk to this place I've never been before on campus, even though it's like 1.5 miles away, like I can figure it out. And the different skills that I'm using are cardinal directions. I've learned to really, really rely on those. And that's been very incredibly helpful. Basic translation of the address system. It doesn't translate perfectly at Stanford campus, but you know, there are some locations that I've been able to kind of guess using that system as well. And also just like a little bit more of being paying attention and also like picking up on cues and really teaching myself different routes. Sort of being my own O&M instructor, if you will, in some sense. I think those are just some of the skills and sort of like the more emotional confidence that I've like taken away for getting around Stanford a little bit better. And it's definitely been a huge improvement since freshman year when I lived on campus.
Makes sense. Thanks.
All right. Does anyone have any other question?
We do not have any other hands right now.
All right. We'll give it a little more. Just feel free to unmute yourself and to say your name or raise your hand.
Can I just add something, Aaron?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Dina at the Carroll Center. I just want to add, so the Carroll Center launched a new program last year called Screen Reader User Testing Program. This is a training program for people who are JAWS users to develop the skills to be screen reader user testers for accessibility, websites, PDF, et cetera. So it is a remote course that we're offering with high employment placement. We're actually working with several large and smaller accessibility companies to hire the people who graduate the program. So we just finished our second class. The first class actually was face-to-face with 6 graduates who are all working. The second class will have 4 graduates who are all currently interviewing for positions. And we will be running our next class in October. So if anybody is interested, there's information on the Carroll Center website at carroll.org, Or perhaps, Aaron, you can share my email people. They can email me if they have an interest in the program.
Yeah, definitely. I would want to check it out myself. I'm trying to get into the accessibility field. And did Min Ha complete that program? We just had her on at the
Min actually is one of our assistive technology instructors in our rehabilitation program. So she teaches computers and cell phone tablets in our rehabilitation program.
All right. I'll just give it one more. Any more questions? Anyone? Say your name or just raise your hand. And while we're waiting, if anyone has any questions, I just do want to say we do like to promote Adjustment to Blindness training centers in the California Council of the Blind, and we want to give everybody an equal opportunity to promote their center, whether you're affiliated with the NFB, not affiliated, the Carroll Center, or you're deafblind. In New York, we wanted to give everybody a chance to tell everybody about their center and let people make the decision on what they want to attend or where they want to attend. And I'll give out everybody's information on the mailing list, or I could just reach out to you if you're interested or have any more questions. But is there any last questions for our panelists? All right, that sounds like a no. All right then, well, thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, Jean, and thank you, Dina. Sorry, Dina, for being up so late, but it's all good. Go Patriots. I do like me some Patriots. And thank you, Jean.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here,
guys. Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
All right, and thank you, guys. Thank you for checking it out. Yeah. All right, guys, we'll move on to our next thing, which is hearing from our national representative, first vice president of the American Council of Blind Students, Bavia Shang. He'll give the national representative reports, and then he'll go into telling us his story, his journey through blindness. So go ahead, Bavia.
Hey, thank you so much, Aaron, for having me. Lovely to be speaking here. And thank you, everybody, for making the time to attend the CCB Students Business Meeting.
Can you go ahead and just say who you are, where you go to school and such, and then you could go into the report.
Sure. So my name is Bhavya Shah. I'm the first vice president of ACB Students. I'm a sophomore at Stanford University. So I am here right with you in California, majoring in mathematical and computational science. I am an international student. I'm active in debate, and I love geeking out. So here's the National Student Report. At the American Council of the Blind Students, late last year, we elected the new board, which comprises of Aaron Espinoza as president, myself, Bhavya Shah, as first vice president, Olivia O'Connell as second vice president, who is an undergraduate at the University of Michigan. We have Mitchell Gridwell serving as secretary from Purdue University, and we have got our board of directors, Jessica Dale, as well as Greg, whom we affectionately call Triple G. So what are things that we've been up to over the last several months that we have been serving in these capacities? One of the things that we recently did was offer stipends for students to attend the DC Leadership Seminar. That is an annual multi-day event hosted by the American Council of the Blind that allows blind and visually impaired people from all over the country to directly meet with their lawmakers to pass and advocate for legislative priorities in the interest of blind and visually impaired people. At ACB Students, we felt that students and youth, of course, the cliche, are the future and deserve the chance without financial constraints to be able to participate in the legislative process in these democratic initiatives. And therefore, we were delighted to be able to sponsor a number of students to attend that at no cost to themselves. One of the other things that we've been working on is revamping our website due to some technical glitches and transitions in administration that has been down for a little bit. So meeting with a number of potential website maintainers and figuring out financial contracts and nailing down the details, we finally think that we have identified the right person, and we are in the process of confirming that, setting that in stone, and getting the website up and running for you as soon as we possibly can. We are also hoping to work on projects related to audio description, specifically on YouTube, because we know that our students and youth consume recreationally, but also educationally, content on YouTube, whether it is for a class, whether it is a science experiment that their chemistry teacher has linked them to, or just hanging out on a Saturday evening watching some famous YouTuber's vlog. We recognize that currently audio description is sorely lacking in that space, while we have made advances in other contexts, such as in the movie industry, OTT platforms and such. YouTube remains an exception, and we're hoping to change that. In the very near future, we will directly on the ACB Students Board be meeting with a number of representatives from the audio description project at the American Council of the Blind, who have been instrumental in increasing the availability of audio description with HBO Max, Netflix, Apple TV, and figuring out how we are able to lend our efforts and times to make that happen on YouTube as well. We have also been active in planning our national convention, which is coming up in a few months from now. It will be happening in person in Nebraska, but also be taking place virtually. So feel free to attend in whatever manner, to whatever extent that you can. And we have a number of events planned. Our second Vice President, Olivia O'Connell, in conjunction with a number of our members, have been hard at work on that, figuring out the financials, the logistics, and just sourcing ideas on events. More on that will be published as and when the details are released, and we will let our second VP take care of the timeline for that. But thoroughly excited for you to consume some of that programming that we will be putting up this July. We are also hoping to make some constitutional changes, because some of the language in there is somewhat obsolete, and the Legislative and Self-Advocacy Committee that we have is working on that. The advocacy committee is working on maybe changing some of the membership structure to reflect the reality of how we currently operate. But suffice to say that all of that will be cleaned up. In many ways, what we have been spending the last several months doing at ACB Students is rebooting our presence where we already had that and cleaning it up in areas where there was some disrepair. And if you've been pleased with the progress that we have made so far, and we would love for you to continue partnering with us, sharing with us your ideas, and getting involved as much as you are, even if more, spreading the word. So that said, how can you get involved with the ACB students? Here are a number of ways you can do that. You can participate in our monthly committee meetings. We have the engagement committee, which I chair, as well as the advocacy committee. Both of those take place every month. And for more details on the Zoom links, as well as the timings, you need to join us on social media and otherwise to get latest updates. Where are we present? We have a Facebook page called American Council of Blind Students. Our Twitter handle is ACB Students. We are also on Instagram at ACB Students. Recently, surprise, surprise, our president, Erin Espinoza, started up our TikTok as well. So we're excited to increase our activity and post content that is meaningful as well as informative for all of you on all of these platforms. Join our Facebook group at the American Council of Blind Students, our mailing list as well, whose details of the listserv can be posted by Erin in the Zoom chat right now or retroactively on the CCBS mailing list. We always love to have questions and discussions, thoughts and troubles, solutions and strategies, always welcome. So join us. Some exciting work lies ahead of us, and we would absolutely love for you to be a part of that. That's it from me as the first Vice President of ACB Students on the activities of the Students Division at the national level.
I wish I had like sound effects to give you an applause, Bavia. Thank you for the national representative report from the ACBS, the national affiliate of the students for ACB. And now we'll hear Bavia's story, his journey through blindness / acceptance of blindness. So go ahead, Bhavya.
Sure. So this is likely to be much more impromptu and from the heart. And we will be figuring out what parts of my journey, the story of my life, will be coming out as I speak. I suppose I should probably step back and start from the absolute beginning. The accent that I have, as you all may have identified, comes from my roots back in India, which is where I was born, brought up, raised, grew up. And I spent the bulk of my life in. I was diagnosed with high myopia when I was 18 months old. So I got cute thick spectacles, which I was, of course, happy to flaunt as a little toddler. But by the age of 5, realized things were a bit more serious. That was roughly when my annual trips to the operation theater began to reinstate my detaching retinas and restore my vision to the extent that they could. I experienced gradual vision loss over the course of the next 6 or 7 years. And by the age of 11 or 12, I had become fully blind. Prior to that, I was living the quote-unquote sighted lifestyle. I was trying to enlarge the font of my textbooks, magnify and illuminate, as opposed to accept that I was going blind and begin to acquire non-visual skills. And that was a bit of a limbo that I was stuck in, wherein society told me that vision was substantially superior to not having it. And I was trying to cling on to the shreds that remained for me. And it was a ride. Let's leave it at that. But when I finally just no longer could rely on what little I had remaining, I later became fully blind, so that sealed the deal for me. I began to approach rehabilitation centers around me to see what life held for me, the little that it did as a blind person. And I consider myself incredibly fortunate to be located in a developing country like India, in one of its more metropolitan areas like Mumbai, wherein there does exist a resource center who exposed me to blind people who were older than me, who were living fulfilling, successful lives professionally, academically, socially, who had the tools, resources, and training that convinced me that there was more in life for me than I might have surmised initially, who actually spent hours training me and training my mother, in fact, as well, our family collectively to progress as not just a blind person, but a blind person situated within the context of finite resources and attitudinal barriers that defines Indian society's culture towards disability. So that was when I began my blindness journey. I was taught Braille, but I never became very good at it. My inclinations were drawn towards assistive technology. I was taught the keyboard shortcuts of JAWS with the delightful voice of ETI Eloquence, and I was fortunate to be able to pick those up quickly. I remember this was in the 6th grade that, yeah, I couldn't really manage with any more shabby handwriting in my notebook in print, and I had a base level of assistive technology skills to take my 11-inch HP mini laptop to school and take notes independently and resume my education at an equal footing. I remember also that while I had my laptop to take, I also needed to get a screen reading software, and JAWS cost money, and that's constituted a significant financial hardship for me. And therefore, I was told of NVDA, non-visual desktop access. Yes, that screen reader that is free and open source and has that really annoying robotic mechanical voice called eSpeak built into it. I tried it, I was opposed to it, and then I was convinced that maybe I could self-learn this non-entity at the time. And that was in many ways one of the first manifestations of self-advocacy and self-learning for me, of problem solving and figuring your way out in systems that you shouldn't expect the average person to be able to thrive. I, as a 13-year-old, read the user guide of NVDA, pretty long document. I actually did check over 170,000 characters. I joined its user's mailing list, wherein I annoyed people with questions and queries, and people were gracious enough to humor me with their knowledge and tips. And that was the beginning of my acceptance of my blindness, and not just an acceptance of a disability that I had to settle for. I began to realize the vast array of possibilities that lay ahead of me. NVIDIA was the beginning, and it stayed an important part of my life, even as to this day, because its community was wherein I got a lot of experience hosting international conferences, getting a hang of GitHub and the software development process, and just being involved in the growth of a piece of assistive technology that has transformed the lives of many around the world. But my life was to be transformed in a multiplicity of other ways over the next several years. I remember in the sixth grade, I was just happy to be able to be equal, be able to do things at an equal pace with equal competency. It was by the end of the sixth grade that I considered that I might have more than average academic inclinations. And by the seventh or eighth grade, I realized that I actually did like geeking out, and I participated in a number of extracurricular activities and filled my timetable, occupied myself with whatever I could lay my hands on, whether this was a science fair or a robotics competition, whether this was a speech and debate event or a model United Nations conference, whether this was something within the school, inter-school, at the city level or state level, national or even international. I was fortunate to find a number of good friends. Yes, bullying, can't really escape that. High schoolers are immature and disability is an easy pick to target on. So that was an aspect of my journey. Yes, I did encounter some teachers who were more willing than others to accommodate my needs, others less so. And yes, I did experience resource constraints as well as attitudinal barriers, the things that I described as just being characteristic of an Indian society's disability culture. In my last years of high school, I decided, being the overambitious me, to take on an advanced science curriculum. It's called the IIT JEE preparatory material, and we learn advanced physics, chemistry, and mathematics. And here's the catch. Blind students haven't really taken this in the past, and we have resource constraints. And therefore, none of my textbooks for the last years of high school were available to me in an accessible electronic format. To be able to convert them then would require a significant financial resources, which neither I nor the resource centers I was affiliated to were able to endure, and B, required a timeline that was just not in synchronous with the fast-paced, vast material that I needed to cover in those 2 years. Hence, this was for 2 solid years that I was manually typing the important aspects of my textbook, say the end of chapter problems, and carrying on. So I was not just studying hard subjects, but also preparing the material that I needed to study those hard subjects. That was an empowering experience, wherein I realized that nothing really could make my disability compound into a barrier, and that things were always surmountable. But it also was an impetus for me to consider more inclusive options, more sustainable strategies, and looked into other places that I could study outside of India. Loved my time there, still miss my friends, family, and of course, most importantly, the utterly incomparable food in India. But I thought the US might be a nice place to study. I'd heard of Stanford, so I applied early and had the absolute privilege of being accepted, along with a generous financial aid package. So here I am. I did my first 2 quarters remotely due to the pandemic, landed in California, packed my bags, dreams, hopes, and arrived at the San Francisco International Airport in March 2021. It's officially been just a little over a year since I've been here. Have thoroughly enjoyed my time, experienced a lot of personal growth, of course, academic challenges, the rigor of a college environment is something that cannot be missed. but have gotten the chance to be involved in the blindness space in the United States. And I'm just utterly privileged to be able to be in this position. I encourage all of you to set yourself to high standards too. Do not let barriers be blockades in your trajectory in life. Things are hard, frequently difficult. Sometimes you need to carve your own path and blaze your own trails. But ultimately, if you persist and succeed, which you will if you do, then the fruit is extremely rewarding. And that is something that I have felt repeatedly in my life. But it has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And I want to thank Erin for the opportunity for inviting me to be here. Thank you so much and good luck to everybody.
Thank you, Bhavya. Thank you. Thank you, First Vice President for the American Council of Blind Students. Thank you for living up to high expectations that we hold in the California Council of Blind Students, as well as the American Council of Blind Students and the California Council of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind. There's too many acronyms and too many things. But yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. All right, guys, we'll move in to the presidential report, treasury report, and then we'll wrap it up with elections. And I'll start off with my presidential report. Let me just start off. So first of all, we started off with the new board. And this is Erin Espinoza, first president of the American Council of Blind Students, the national affiliate. All right, so we started off, we had elections in November, in July when we're supposed to have them, because we had trouble with our voting system. So that's when we started off. We started off with a whole new board. It's me, Erin Espinoza, as president, Bhavya Shah as first vice president, Olivia O'Connell as second vice president, treasurer, secretary is Mitchell Bridwell, and I skipped over one. Carlos, I'm having trouble with his last name. Bobby, can you help me out? Carlos
Metran.
Sorry, I always mess up his name. Sorry. Director one is Greg Wansmeter. Director two is Jessica Dell, and that was the new board that was elected in 2021 of November. Okay. All right. That was the national board. But some of the stuff we did at the California Council of the Blind is we adopted Groups.io. I used to have to CC everyone, which was kind of a pain until Andy showed me how to do it, which is just add a comma behind everyone's name. But before then, I was just doing it manually one by one. So that's something we did because the CCB was going to move on to that and adopt that, and also ACB National. So we kind of wanted to centralize everything and adopt what they were doing. So that's something we did. We gave 6 stipends to students to attend the 2021 ACB National Convention. We had them write a written or verbal report, which all of them did do during a call, and then some of them turned in a written report. So that was great. We got to expose people to the American Council of the Blind because convention was virtual. And right now we're currently giving stipends to the CCB convention, which are still open. So get those applications filled out. We currently got 2 people that have filled them out. So definitely don't miss your chance to get convention paid for. We'll cover your costs. We also created a liaison for vocational rehabilitation, which is Christy's husband, Edward Crispin. He currently works for the Department of Rehabilitation, and he helps me with any questions I have with rehabilitation. We currently have a high school student in Orange County, and she didn't have a case open with DOR, and he gave me all the answers I needed to pass along to her to open up that case, as well as Bhavya. He's, like he said, he's from India, and we figured out that people that are here on visas and are not native citizens can open up a case. So those are 2 those are two great things we accomplished with him. And membership is what I'm really proud of. So when I took over, when the board first came in, we had like 19 members, but the majority of them weren't actual students. We only had like 6 actual students, and we currently have all 19 students. So we quadrupled our membership. So that's really great, guys. And everybody's a student. So that's great work, everybody, for recruiting. You helped build the California Council of Blind Students. All right, and also another thing I'm very proud of is our social event. We didn't do much social events, but I think we made up for it for the one that we did have. We had a joint Christmas party with the California Association of Blind Students, and that went great. We had games, we listened to music, but most of all, we built a relationship with the California Council of Blind Students, which is the student affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind of California. That's their student affiliate. So that was great and something I'm very proud of for the board for accepting and being willing to go along with it. And also our friends in the NFB student division, they partnered with us. So that was really great. Does anyone have any questions on that, or anyone want me to clarify anything I said or anything we were up to? All right, we'll pass it over to Andy and she'll give the treasury report.
All right, hello everybody. So after making a $25 donation for a door prize, our account is currently at $975.22.
All right, is that it, Andy?
Yeah, that's my update.
All right, that was quick. All right, so we'll start off with elections. And Sarah, can you assist me on some of this? I'm basically asking for nominations and such. It's just the process. I sometimes get mixed up with that. But Sarah, are you still here? Okay, Bavia, can you assist?
Sure, just give me one moment.
Okay, yeah, I just need help. All right, we'll start off from the top, though. Can our Zoom host check people's hands getting raised as votes? We need an alternative person. I can't do it because that would be a conflict of interest.
I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to call out the positions as well as count the hands raised.
All right, we'll start off from the top then. This is for the president position of the California Council of the Blind Students, and all these positions were won.
Erin, so in the interest of fairness, I think it's probably best if someone who isn't running sort of conducts it.
Okay.
So if you could just brief me with all of the positions that are open for election.
Yeah, so it's president, first vice president, secretary, and treasury.
Okay, sounds good. So first, let's start with the president of the California Council of Blind Students. Folks are free to nominate themselves by simply unmuting and saying out their name. Alternatively, if you would recommend another person to run for that position, you may nominate them. And contingent on that other person accepting the nomination, they will also be entered into the race. After we have collected all nominations and given enough time to allow for there to be any further, we will then proceed to voting. And I will explain further about that when we get there. So beginning with the post for president.
Yeah, Erin, I would like to nominate myself.
All right, Erin Espinoza. Anybody else would like to nominate themselves or nominate somebody else for the position of president? Going once. Going twice. All right.
Andy, Tom, I'm not trying to nominate anyone. I'm sorry, but Erin, I think that we have a slight a misunderstanding here. We're doing all four positions.
Yeah, because it was a 1-year term, remember? They were all 1-year terms because we didn't have elections in the past.
Oh, because of the COVID year and everything put off. Okay, my bad. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No worries. Thank you for clarifying. All right, so let's vote on Aaron Espinoza for president. So I will be calling out the names of all the individuals who are nominated for any particular position. In this case, we only have one. And people who are in support of that candidate can raise their hands on Zoom. It is Alt-Y on Windows, Command-Y on Mac. And hopefully, after these last, which seems like a century of being exclusively over Zoom, folks are aware of the other ways if they're using alternative systems to tune into Zoom. But the person who is nominated cannot vote themselves. With those clarifications, are there any further questions about the process? Seeing none. All right. Everybody who would like to vote for Aaron Espinoza as president of the California Council of Blind Students, may I request that you raise your hand.
Okay, we have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hands so far.
All right, let's give it a couple more seconds. Mm-hmm. Again, individuals who are nominated cannot raise their own hand, cannot vote in their own race. All right, so we do have sufficient participation and with 6 votes for Aaron Espinoza, you have been elected as the president of CCB Students. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Yeah, like I was saying, those two big things, the Christmas party with the NFB students was a big accomplishment that I got under my belt with the rest of the board, as well as tripling our student membership. So hopefully we keep that up and we work on the initiatives at the state level and with the national student affiliate. Thank you very much, everybody.
Great job last year and good luck for the next year. If we could lower all hands for now before we start with the next position. All righty. So the next position that is up for election is first vice president of the California Council of Blind Students. Opening it up for nominations.
Nominate Sarah Harris.
Sarah Harris, thank you. Was that Sarah Harris themselves?
No.
All right.
Hi. I'm actually not a member.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Thank you, though, for the thought. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Any other nominations? All right. Going once. You can nominate yourself or you can nominate another person.
This is Matthew. I would like to nominate myself.
Awesome. That is Matthew Gibbs?
Yes.
Awesome. Any other nominations? Going once. Going twice. All righty. Again, as we did last time, everybody who would like to vote for Matthew Gibbs as first vice president of the California Council of Blind Students, please raise your hand.
Two, three, four, five. Got five so far.
Thank you.
I think some people are having some issues with the internet. I was having some breakup a minute ago, so Aaron will be back, I'm sure.
Sure. All right. That should be sufficient time. With five votes, Matthew Gibbs, congratulations on being the first vice president of CCB students for the coming year.
Woohoo! Go Matthew! I know that guy. Good job.
Would you like to say a few words?
Sure. Thank you everyone for electing me as your first vice president of CCBS, and I look forward to working with Aaron and the newly elected board this upcoming year.
Awesome. Thank you and best wishes. All right. Over to the position of Secretary of California Council of Blind Students. The nominations are open.
If I move away from you guys quickly, I can scan it and I promise I'll come back.
It's Treasurer Bavia. You skipped that.
Oh, sure. Let's do Treasurer of CCB Students then. The nominations are open to the floor. For context, Erin, we did President, First Vice President, that's Matthew. And as he said, the next one is Treasurer.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Jesus Perez.
Thank you. Jesus, do you accept?
Yeah, I accept, yeah.
Awesome. We've got Jesus Perez as a candidate for the treasurer of the California Council of Blind Students. Any other nominations? Going once. Going twice. All right, it's time to vote. Everybody in favor of Jesus Perez as the treasurer of the California Council of Blind Students, please raise your hands.
We're at five now. Six.
All right. Looks like the hands are stable.
Yes.
With that, with six votes, I want to congratulate Jesus Perez for being the newly elected treasurer of the California Council of Blind Students. Congratulations.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sounds good. For the final position on the board of CCB Students, the position of Secretary, the nominations are open to the floor. May I ask simultaneously that folks lower their hands from the previous ballot?
I would like to nominate Laureen Stephanie.
Laureen Stephanie, do you accept?
With support, I do, because I've never done it. This is Laureen Stephanie.
For sure. Laureen Stephanie, any other nominations for the position of Secretary? Going once, going twice. All right, let's vote on the position of secretary for the California Council of Blind Students. All in favor of Laureen Stephanie as secretary of the California Council of Blind Students, may I ask that you raise your hand?
You got five. Six. Holding at six.
Uh-huh. Looks like we've stabilized at that. And with that, for the final board position of this year's elections for the California Council of Blind Students, I'm delighted to congratulate Laureen Stephanie as the new secretary of the California Council of Blind Students. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
All right, sounds good. You've got a full board and a lot of work cut out ahead of you. And as first VP at the national students level, thrilled to work in conjunction with you. Back to you, Erin.
All right, yeah, thanks for everybody for running. The student division is filled with students, for students. That's great to see that we have students leading the student affiliates. And thank you everybody for running. Just quickly, I want to give thanks, starting off with Min Ha. She gave her idea. She explained her idea about the Holman Prize. I want to thank Jean Kim for representing the NFB. I want to thank Dina Rosenbaum for representing the Carroll Center. And even though they didn't get it to attend, I want to thank the Helen Keller Center in New York for our Deaf Blind Friends. Then I want to thank our national representative, Bhavya Shah, first vice president. Also for a great story on overcoming his blindness and accepting his blindness and showing us to have high expectations, even though we're blind, to not let that hold us back. And everybody that ran once again, and I hope to see everybody at our monthly membership call. Thank you very much, everybody. Go ahead.
Andy here. Before we get too close to closing, I just wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of what the current terms will look like. Based on our constitution, the vice president and treasurer are elected in even numbered years, which means that the vice president and the treasurer are now on term for a 2-year term. And then that means that the president and secretary, who are to be elected odd numbered years, they are on a 1-year term.
All right. Thanks for that clarification. Now we're kind of back to normal. Hopefully next year we'll be back in person. And yeah, definitely just back in normal term wise.
And then the other thing is, Erin, is that you and I will need to chat soon to talk about what will go on with the bank account.
All right, yeah, we can do that offline. I want to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second to adjourn the meeting?
My second.
All right, all in favor of ending the meeting, say aye.
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 Aye. All right, guys. Thanks.
Aye.
Yeah, sorry for jumping again. Yeah, thanks for coming, everybody. And I'll get out the information for everything you spoke about. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Good luck.
Great meeting, guys.
Good night and good luck, everybody.
Good job, Bobby. Good job, Erin.
Great meeting.